Did you know that electrons at the furthest reaches of the known universe can exert forces that cause electrons to move on Earth? How can we explain these interactions? Let's find out in the chapter Electric Charges and Fields. We know that electric and magnetic forces determine the properties of atoms, molecules, and bulk matter. From simple experiments on frictional electricity, one can infer that there are two types of charges in nature, and like charges repel, and unlike charges attract. By convention, the charge on a glass rod rubbed with silk is positive, that on a plastic rod rubbed with fur is then negative. Conductors allow movement of electric charge through them, insulators do not. In metals, the mobile charges are electrons. In electrolytes, both positive and negative ions are mobile. Electric charge has three basic properties: quantization, additivity, and conservation. If we look at each of these, quantization just means that the total charge of a body is always an integral multiple of a basic quantum of charge, that is Q equals Ne, where N can be 1, 2, 3, or even 0. Proton and electron have charges plus E and minus E respectively. For macroscopic charges, for which N is a very large number, quantization of charge can be ignored. Additivity of electric charges means that the total charge of a system is the algebraic sum of all individual charges in the system. Conservation of electric charges means that the total charge of an isolated system remains unchanged with time. This means that when bodies are charged through friction, there's a transfer of electric charge from one body to another, but no creation or destruction of charge. To put the force between two charges in quantitative terms, we have the Coulomb's law. The mutual electrostatic force between two point charges Q1 and Q2 is proportional to the product Q1-Q2 and inversely proportional to the square of the distance r separating them. We have the constant of proportionality K, which equals 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught, and these two important values are epsilon naught equals 8.854 into 10 raised to minus 12 Coulomb square per Newton per meter square. And the approximate value of K equals 9 into 10 raised to 9 Newton meter square per Coulomb square. This force seems similar to the gravitational force in some terms. The ratio of electric force and gravitational force between a proton and an electron is ke square by g me and mp, which is approximately 2.4 into 10 raised to 39. Next up is the superposition principle. This principle is based on the property that the forces with which two charges attract or repel each other are not affected by the presence of a third additional charge. For an assembly of charges, Q1, Q2, Q3, the force on any charge, say Q1, is the vector sum of the force on Q1 due to Q2 and the force on Q1 due to Q3 and so on. For each pair, the force is given by the Coulomb's law for those two charges exclusively. The electric field E at a point due to a charge configuration is the force on a small positive test charge Q placed at the point divided by the magnitude of the charge. Electric field due to a point charge Q has a magnitude Q by 4 pi epsilon naught r square, and it is radially outwards from Q. If Q is positive and radially inwards, Q is negative. Like Coulomb force, electric field also satisfies the superposition principle. Now there's the question of representing electric field lines. An electric field line is a curve drawn in such a way that the tangent at each point on the curve gives the direction of electric field at that point. The relative closeness of field lines indicates the relative strength of electric field. At different points, they crowd near each other in regions of strong electric field and are far apart where the electric field is weak. In regions of constant electric field, the field lines are uniformly spaced parallel straight lines. Some of the important properties of electric field lines are: field lines are continuous curves without any breaks. Two field lines cannot cross each other. Electrostatic field lines start at positive charges and end at negative charges. They cannot form closed loops. Let's consider a pair of equal and opposite charges Q and minus Q separated by some distance 2a, This is called an electric dipole. Its dipole moment vector P has magnitude 2qa and is in the direction of the dipole axis from minus q to plus q. Field of an electric dipole in its equatorial plane, that is the plane perpendicular to its axis and passing through its center at a distance r from the center, can be written as minus p over 4 pi epsilon naught times 1 by a square plus r square raised to 3 over 2. And when r is comparatively larger than a, it can be simplified as minus p over 4 pi epsilon naught r cube. Dipole electric field on the axis at a distance r from the center is 2πr over 4πε epsilon naught r square minus a square the whole squared, simplified as 2π over 4πε epsilon naught r cube. The 1 by r cube dependence of dipole electric fields should be noted in contrast to the 1 by r square dependence of the electric field due to a point charge. In a uniform electric field E, a dipole experiences a torque tau given by P cross E but experiences no net force. The flux delta phi of electric field E through a small area element delta S is given by delta phi equals E dot ds, and the vector element delta S is delta S and n cap, where delta S is the magnitude of the area element and n cap is the normal to the area element. An important topic is the Gauss law. The flux of electric field through any closed surface S is 1 by epsilon naught times the total charge enclosed by S. The law is especially useful in determining electric field E when the source distribution has simple symmetry. We look at three cases now. Thin, infinitely long straight wire of uniform linear charge density lambda. The electric field is lambda over 2 pi epsilon naught r, where r is the perpendicular distance of the point from the wire and n cap is the radial unit vector in the plane normal to the wire passing through the point. Next up, we have infinite thin plane sheet of uniform surface charge density sigma. The electric field is sigma over 2 epsilon naught n cap, where n cap is a unit vector normal to the plane outward on either side. And lastly, consider a thin spherical shell of uniform surface charge density sigma. The electric field is q over 4 pi epsilon naught r square r cap, where r is the distance of the point from the center of the shell and r is also the radius of the shell, q is the total charge of the shell, and q equals 4 pi r square sigma. The electric field outside the shell is as though the total charge is concentrated at the center. The same result is true for a solid sphere of uniform volume charge density, and the field is zero at all points inside the shell. And that was all about electric charges and fields.